The second Aliyah of Parshas Vayishlach begins with Yaakov still preparing for his confrontation with Esav. And the Aliyah begins with the words, Vayolan Sham Balayla Hahu, and he stayed over that night. And the Uznayim Latorah comments that even though it would have made more sense if there was going to be a war for Yaakov to attack at night, however, he was afraid of killing someone unnecessarily or at all, as we saw in the previous Aliyah. So therefore, he waited out the night so as not to make a mistake. But he is accused of making a mistake in a different sense a little bit later on in the Aliyah, in Pasuk of Gimel. So we find a reference to his 11 children. And Rashi asks, what happened to Dina? Why is she not included here? And Rashi tells us that she was hidden away, and Yaakov was afraid that Esav would want to marry her, and therefore, in order to stop that from happening, he hid her away, and this ended up being a source of punishment for him and for her because of this missed opportunity. And this is a very difficult idea to understand, because yes, it's true that perhaps Dina could have had a good influence on Esav and turned him around, but of course she was in great danger from him. And the idea that any responsible father would seek to marry off his daughter to whoever the worst possible person is just because she may be able to turn him around. And the greater your daughter is, the more you should try to find the worst person so she'll have the greatest impact. No responsible father would presumably be expected to do that. It would seem that Yaakov did the only thing that makes sense in this case. So why should there be any sense of an onesh? So there are various interpretations. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his Emes LeYaakov, has a number of approaches which all suggest from different places that maybe Yaakov wasn't really as concerned about this as he might have thought, and therefore he doesn't have that justification, and he's held responsible for missing out on the opportunity to influence Esau. The Torah Tamima suggests that actually Yaakov could have been confident that the influence would have gone in one direction, that Dina would have indeed been successful in influencing Esau. But because he hated him, he didn't want to give him that opportunity, so indeed he was accountable. However, many of the Bali Musar have a different approach here, and they suggest that there's no question that what Yaakov did was the right thing here. This was for sure the necessary decision. However, what was critical here was that he needed to also have rachmanis. He needed to have a sense of sympathy for what was lost. And there's no contradiction between the two, that one sometimes has to make harsh decisions. And at the same time, that doesn't eliminate the possibility that there also has to be an appreciation for what could have been. And the fact that apparently Yaakov didn't have that sympathy, didn't also feel the sense of loss for Esav, so that is why he is held accountable. The Uznayim LaTorah poses the question that if indeed there is some accountability for Yaakov here for not worrying about Esav, so how come Leah also doesn't have to pay a price, because we have a tradition that she cried for the thought that she would have to marry Esav, so she wanted to save herself from that. So why doesn't she have the same accountability? So he suggests two answers. One answer was that she didn't have the same schus that Dina would have had, because she was a tzadekes basa rasha. She would have had a harder time standing up to Esav and not learning from him. So therefore, she was more justified in avoiding the situation. And perhaps even more crucially, the second answer, she wasn't responsible for Esav the way Yaakov was. And therefore, it's a very different calculation. So after this, we are told that Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, that somehow Yaakov finds himself alone. So why is he alone? So the Gemara tells us that that Rashi quotes that he went back because of Pachim Kitanim, that there were these small jugs that he forgot about, and therefore he endangered himself by going back to get them, which is quite a striking thing. There was a comedian many decades ago named Jack Benny who used to do a routine where he would say that he was mugged, and the mugger demanded, "Your money or your life?" And then when he didn't answer quick enough, so the mugger pushed him again, so your money or your life. And Jack Benny says, I'm thinking. So that attitude seems to come from his ancestor and his namesake, the original Yaakov, because the Gemara tells us that Yaakov endangered himself by going back for these small utensils. This shows us that tzaddikim chavivim aleihem amonim yosu migufon, that they are more concerned about their property than they even are about their own lives. And that's, of course, very surprising. We would assume that tzaddikim, by their very nature, are not materialistic and aren't focused on that at all, especially at the threat to their lives. So the Gemara tells us that the issue is shelo pashtu yadayim begazel, that they don't steal, and therefore the property that they do have is a testament to their honesty and their integrity. And there also seems to be a theme here that many developed, that tzaddikim recognize that all their resources are tools for realizing their potential. And one could compare that the same way, if God forbid, let's say a shul was on fire, so people often run in to take out the Sifrei Torah. And then it's understood, because the Sifrei Torah are so holy, we wouldn't want them to get lost. So the tzaddik, who has such an appreciation for how everything he has is able to be utilized for spiritual purposes, so therefore he doesn't want to let anything get lost unnecessarily, and he has that awareness that transfers into a concern even for property. This could perhaps also be taken together with another idea, this pachim ketanim, or this pach. There is a tradition that Levado should be read Al-Kado, that he went back for this Kad. And there are some who suggest, among them, the Sefer Sifsei Kohen Al-HaTorah, that was written by one of the Talmidim of the Arizal, Rav Mordechai Cohen, that these Pachim Kitanim are actually a reference to Hanukkah, to the jug of oil in that context. There are different ways of explaining this. They refer to the idea that in the beginning of Vayetze, when Yaakov lay down on the rocks that all came together into one rock, so then he had this oil that appeared and he was able to obtain, and he anointed the rock with that oil. And there is also a notion there that the jug kept refilling and never emptied out, and that this is the same type of idea that we find with Hanukkah, and that the miracle of Hanukkah is rooted in that original jug of Yaakov Avinu, and that's what he goes back for. So perhaps they all connect to this idea that Hanukkah, especially where the whole miracle, or at least the miracle of the Pach HaShemen, seems to focus on the idea of limited resources that don't seem to be sufficient and miraculously become sufficient, but that points our attention to just how much we are dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu providing us with the physical tools to be able to accomplish what we need to. And that itself is a recognition of the role that that has. And so this idea that tzaddikim have a special appreciation for that is perhaps connected here also to the miracle of Hanukkah itself, and that's where it finds its roots. Some also point out that there's another hint to Hanukkah in the idea of Yaakov being by himself. Levado, the Medrash compares this to Veniska Vashem Levado. And perhaps there's also a theme here of Rabbim Biad Ma'atim, just as we say in Al-Hanisim, that we recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, together with even the small numbers of the Jewish people, are able to prevail even against threats of far greater numbers. So we are told that they struggle, Yaakov and the Malach struggle, ve'yavek ishimo adalos hashachar, and they kicked up dust. The Gemara says that it went up to Kiseh HaKavod, and the Torah Tumima comments that the imagery of this dust going up to Kiseh HaKavod, so that is reminiscent of the idea that the Kadosh Baruch Hu declares regarding the war with Amalek, that his kisei will not be complete until Amalek is defeated. And this represents the constant ongoing fight against evil. So this struggle here was a part of that whole fight, and this fight will go on. This battle against evil will continue and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kisei will not be Shalem, that his majesty will not be full until this battle is completed. And part of the message of this whole conflict, particularly here in this parasha, the Zayim L'Torah comments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was making the point that Yaakov can't rely either on his koach or on his osher, or his richness, his wealth, that here his osher seems to be what got him attacked here, this going back for the Pachim Ketanin, and his strength didn't prevent him from getting ambushed. It's only Hashem's help that gets him through. And that, of course, is itself part of the ongoing message. So we find here that his name is changed, and we're told that his name is not going to be Yaakov anymore, but rather it's going to be Yisrael, Ki Sarisa Im Elokim V'Anashim V'Tuchal. So this idea of his name being changed, so here the Torah seems to say that he won't be called Yaakov anymore, but as the Gemara in the end of the first parak of Brachos notes, that it doesn't seem to mean it in the same sense as we find by Avram's name change, that when Avram was changed to Avraham, so that was complete, and the Gemara says there's some kind of a violation if one refers to Avram by his old name. But when it comes to Yaakov, so we find that both names are used. And even though his name is changed to Yisrael, Yaakov is still used. They're not used together, they're used in different times. And that's itself a discussion that Shuvas Chasam Sofer and the Nedi Behuda have discussions about whether it was the custom in olden times to use double names, or just to use one name. And the Chasam Sofer and his Shuvas, this is in Eben Ezra and Chelek Beis and Yud Ches, he quotes a story from the Maharshal. And the Maharshal discusses a case of a husband and wife who clashed over what to name their son. One wanted to name him Meir, and one wanted to name him Uri. So they went to the rabbi, and they asked him to settle the issue. And he discussed, and he discussed the matter, and he suggested that they should name him Shneir. Shneir being Shnei Or, because both of their names were versions of the word Or, Meir and Uri, so to combine them and name them Shneir. So he notes there that the simple Eitzah could have just been given both names. So apparently, back in that time, there wasn't a tradition of giving two names, and that's the topic of that discussion. And apparently here also, even when Yaakov is also called Yisrael, but we don't find him called Yisrael Yaakov. However, in terms of the significance of the name, so the Maharam Shik comments that the name is meant to coexist with the old name, because Yaakov is a name of Katnus, is holding on to Esau's heel, and Yisrael is a name of greatness. And the Sutton is trying to lull Yaakov into a sense of Gaiva here by describing him with this term of greatness. So the notion is he's still connected on some level to the name Yaakov, because he still stays rooted in his sense of humility. And another Yisrael Yaakov who did use the two names together, the Stipler and his Sefer on Chumash and the Berkus Peretz, so he suggests that the difference between the name change of Avram, which was absolute, and the name change of Yaakov to Yisrael, where Yaakov still continues to be used, is that Avram means that he is the ancestor of a great nation. So that is a permanent and absolute change. But Yisrael means that he defeats his enemies, but we know that there will still be more to defeat, and therefore to say that this is a complete changeover is not accurate. There's still more for those who bear the name Yisrael to defeat in this ongoing battle against their enemies and an evil, but with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, they will be successful, just as was the original Yisrael.